Welcome back. We have more candidates for Lieutenant Governor. Let's start with the Libertarian candidate, Billy Toyin. Welcome, sir.
Yes, you said Lieutenant Governor?
Excuse me, Governor.
Okay.
We've had too many candidates for Governor here, and Lieutenant Governor. Thank you, sir, for joining us. You've run before. What other office did you seek?
Like now, there was nobody else to do it, so I did run for governor. And before that, I've had two state house races.
Okay, and tell us a little bit about that experience.
Well, it's been an interesting experience each and every time. You certainly learn a lot. And the experience is I can't seem to get anybody else to do it, so it's my turn again each time. But I think it's important to do it.
And you put yourself forward in these kind of races. What do you hope to accomplish running by putting yourself forward?
Well, the chance of winning is like winning a lottery. It's not impossible. Dark horses have won, but I'm not holding my breath. What you can do is set the stage, though, for the idea of self-responsibility, the principles of individual liberty and reclaiming our government and making it possible for future candidates, for other candidates running, and to get the word out and to communicate with the other candidates. It's important to keep at it over and over and over again, and eventually a change can take place.
And if you're interested in fundamentals, which seems to be of government and of democracy, what are those fundamentals?
Well, the fundamentals are that of self-government primarily. The fundamentals of making government small enough to fit inside the Constitution. The fundamentals of not having leaders, but public servants. Public servants that will adhere to the Constitution and serve the will of the people in their quest to live their own lives. Limited government, self-government, where people govern themselves.
If you're going to cut the size of government, what are you going to eliminate?
Right now, are you talking the state budget?
Any way you pick it, whether it's state budget, departments, whatever you like.
Number one, we would have to hire a team of forensic accountants. I'm going to read from a previous CAFR, just very briefly highlighted. Prior to 1985, this is from the independent auditor, most unrestricted revenues flow directly into the state's general fund where they were available to pay day-to-day costs of operating government. No longer the case. The legislature has established 30 cash pools. It was up to 115. It's more now. The effect of these actions diverted cash historically destined to the general fund to other cash pools not available to pay day-to-day operating costs. And further on, it is mentioned here where there's been a departure from generally accepted accounting. I didn't expect to. I'm just going to. That they weren't able to audit these entities diverted off budget. I'm not going to go too hyper-technical, but I just want to get to the bottom line to this. Except for the effect of the departure from generally accepted accounting principles and discussed in the preceding paragraph, where they have to accept off-budget reports from other auditors, not allowed to audit the general purpose referred to, so on and so forth. There's been a departure from generally accepted accounting principles. We need a team of forensic accountants. At one time, city, state, and federal, they all have the comprehensive annual financial reports. There are legitimate off-budget entities, public employees, retirement, permanent fund.
So if I might interrupt you, so are you saying the present people who are governing are cooking the books? Is that what we're to take out of this?
Well, I would say cooking the books, but the fact is none of this is secret. They're doing it right out in public and nobody has a clue. Most normal people don't know what a CAFR is. Most people, if I wasn't running for office, would order a copy from Juno. You can also look up online, also to have somebody teach you how to read it. But it is not secret. It is almost a system of double bookkeeping where the state budget is only a fraction of the revenues. To put it in a nutshell, if I gave you $100 a week, to run the kingdom of Michael Carey, and you pick an arbitrary number of $20. That's my operating budget. I spent $21. I ran over $1. Or I spent $18. I got a $2 surplus. What about this other $80?
Okay.
It's off budget, you see? Okay. So that's in a nutshell without going too hyper-technical.
We need to go to your closing statement of 1 minute, please.
Okay. Well, I would say right now I'm a plain, ordinary working person. I'm not a professional politician. I did have to stand up and say no. And I would like to just touch bases with everybody and bring up the fact that when tyranny, overblown government seems most firmly entrenched, a change can happen. And recent history has shown this and is living proof that nothing can stop the power of an idea whose time has come. My friends, the time has come. The time has come for us all to take back ownership and responsibility for our own lives. This isn't about me personally. It's about an idea. It is about the idea of self-responsibility and self-government. Many issues face us. Many call for government by others. All systems of others lead to poverty, injustice, and strife because those in control, no matter how holy, will abuse the power. Please stand with me, vote for me, vote for an idea. Not me personally, but I will ask for your vote. Thank you.
Okay. The Democrats are with us, and let's turn to them. First of all, Ethan Berkowitz for an opening statement of 1 minute, sir.
Thank you very much, Michael, and thank you to the viewers and listeners of KAKM. You know, it's a great honor to be able to run for governor of this incredible state. We've got tremendous opportunities. We've got huge responsibilities, great resources. But I'm extremely concerned that we're succumbing to the forces of complacency and mediocrity. I'm concerned that if we continue to do what we've been doing, we're going to get what we've got, which isn't what we need. We need energy policy in the state that delivers low-cost, affordable energy to people. We need an infrastructure base in the state that allows us to bring our goods to market and add value to those resources. And most importantly, we need a workforce that's ready to go to work. I think Alaska, with the right kind of leadership, with strong, tough leadership, can avoid the problems that have affected the rest of the world. Alaska has amazing potential. And this is a summer where we've seen the passing of giants, people who worked hard to bring the greatness to this state. We have to live up to their legacy, and we can't do it doing what we've been doing.
Okay, thank you, sir. Now let's turn to Hollis French.
Michael, thank you, and good evening, everyone. Thanks for having me into your home. I'm Hollis French. I'm running for governor, and I want you to know I'm focused on two issues, renewable energy and education. Let's talk about the first one. We should be taking our oil revenue and investing it in renewable energy projects around the state. I think that's how we secure a strong economic foundation for the future, and it's how I lower your home heating costs, which I know are high. That's number one. Number two is education. You know, I'm a Democrat. I think the way you give every person a fair chance in life is you give them the best education you can. I moved to Alaska in 1978. I think we had one of the best education systems in the nation then. It's gone downhill a little recently. I want to change that. I've got a lot of ideas I hope to discuss with you tonight in detail. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, sir. Now let's turn to the candidate question round, and we'll start with Hollis French. Your first question for your opponent.
Sure, and thank you. Ethan, you know, I've read your oil tax proposal. I've read what you put out about it. And my question is how can you say it's better than ACES? Why do you want to scrap ACES when it's done such a good job for the state? It's put $12 billion into savings. It's funded renewable energy and education. It's helped build savings. It's doing the right thing for Alaska. How can you promise Alaskans your idea will deliver like ACES has?
I think standing still in a changing world is an amazingly dangerous thing to do. I think there are great tests that we've passed in this country and the state. Alaska would never have come to be a state. The permanent fund would never have existed if we just stood still while the world was changing. The proposal I put forward allows us to save our oil wealth. not just the portion that currently goes to the permanent fund, but all of our oil wealth. And if we save our oil wealth, we're going to have fiscal stability, we're going to have greater opportunity, and we're going to have a much better ability to deliver on projects like the natural gas pipeline. I believe that as we see declining production on the North Slope, that we have to do things differently. And what my proposal says is, let's try something different as we move forward. Let's try something that encourages production. Instead of being locked into a one-size-fits-all tax, let's be a lot more flexible than ACES allows us to be.
Rebuttal, sir.
You know, it still sounds risky to me. I've read that we have to sit down under my opponent's plan and negotiate royalties on a field-by-field basis with the oil industry. That doesn't sound good. ACES, in 2008, when oil prices hit $145 a barrel, we put $5 billion into savings, the single biggest deposit into savings in the history of the state. We've funded renewable energy projects. We've forward-funded education, something that teachers and educators have been asking for decades. And meanwhile, the industry's doing fine. Since 2007, when we passed ACES, jobs are up. Since we passed ACES in 2007, investment is up on the North Slope. And as we saw last week from ConocoPhillips, profits are still strong. If we'd had ACES in 1978 when I moved to Alaska, I've said this somewhat in jest, but we'd have marble schools built around this state. We'd have marble facilities because we'd have had the resources we need to build Alaska.
Final thought, Mr. Berkowitz?
Sure. The ACES replaced a broken system, the economic limit factor. But you don't stop just because you've made progress. You have to keep going. The world is a changing place, and Alaska is in real jeopardy if we stand still on ACES. There are challenges confronting ACES currently. It's being eroded. And unless we consolidate those gains, the benefits that Senator French talked about will evaporate.
Ethan Berkowitz, now it's your turn to ask a question. Your question for Mr. French.
Thank you very much. I've got this vision that in 15 or 25 or 50 years, every community in Alaska will be energy self-sufficient. I think there's incredible renewable energy resources out there that will allow us to create jobs in communities, make communities sustainable. And Hollis, I've heard you talk about your plan for renewable energy across Alaska. What exactly is your plan?
Thanks, Ethan. Excuse me. Real simple. Invest our oil revenue in renewable energy projects around the state. We made big progress this year. I'm a member of the Senate Resources Committee. We passed a major resources bill, a bipartisan bill. And we did good work. We put in money for things like weatherizing state buildings, imagine that, for helping people with their home heating costs. We passed a bill that stimulates geothermal exploration. I was there at the bill signing. We're doing good work. The energy bill is a step in the right direction, but we need now, while we have the revenue from ACES, from a strong oil tax, to invest in hydro in Southeast, in wind and geothermal here, and in Western Alaska, small targeted solutions, whether it's biomass or biodiesel for each village, so that they can heat their homes. We can heat our homes. Alaskans can heat your homes. It's important. I'm passionate about that. Thank you.
1 minute, Mr. Berkowitz.
Thank you very much. You know, it's one thing that the legislature has a plan, and I'm happy you were part of that proposal that exists. But until Alaska has clear rules for independent power producers, you're not going to see the flow of investment dollars into renewable energy projects that are necessary to bring down the cost of energy across the state. Villages that are paying 60 and 80 cents a kilowatt hour can't develop the resources they need. When you go to the 100 communities across Alaska that need wind power and don't have it, you see a need. When you talk about the geothermal energy that's just sitting in volcanoes, in hot springs, in warmer earth here, we're not taking advantage of it. When you see the in-stream hydro, we're not doing everything we can for it. Alaska, which has 90% of America's tidal potential, isn't capturing that potential. We're not on the cutting edge of research. We need a comprehensive plan so Alaskans can be the beneficiary of low-cost energy, not just for reduced utility bills, but also for jobs and for an expertise that will make us a world leader once again.
Sir?
Thank you, Michael. We've taken steps in the right direction. And Alaskans, I'd ask you to pose this question to yourself. To what degree has each candidate been able to bring their ideas down to earth and make them real? This year, we passed a good, strong bill. We fixed PCE, power cost equalization, that brings the cost of electricity down. We helped Kodiak get off diesel. That's a concrete result. less diesel burned in Kodiak is a good thing. I've heard my friend Ethan Berkowitz speak about that. We're making progress, and we'll make more if I'm governor. Thank you.
It's time for the host questions, and I'm going to start. You'll both get the same question, but I'm going to start with Ethan Berkowitz. For more than 30 years, we have heard it's time to build a gas line, and the gas line is right around the corner. What went wrong?
There's three things that went wrong, three reasons why we don't have a gas line. Number one, we don't have a fiscal plan, so we go to the industry and continue to say, we need your help so we can generate revenue because we're dependent on that gas line. Number two, we go to the industry and say, we don't have an energy plan in this state, and we're desperate for the energy that comes from a gas line. And number three, we don't have any credible alternatives than to do business with the people that have been slow to develop our resource. We've got to do better. This is a state that prides itself on our independence and self-reliance. And if we're going to take charge of developing a natural gas pipeline, which we must do, we need a fiscal plan, we need an energy plan, and we need credible alternatives to doing business with the oil industry alone. And those credible alternatives include things like developing in-state demand for that natural gas through gas to liquids projects, through mining projects, and through providing gas as a heating and energy source for the rail belt. As well as for rural Alaska. But we also need to find alternative ways of financing the natural gas pipeline. If we do these things, and I have plans on how to get these accomplished, we can build a natural gas pipeline and all Alaska gas pipeline on our terms and our timeline.
Thank you. Hollis French.
We're actually closer than we've ever been. We just finished in a so-called open season where we took bids from the gas producers, BP, Conoco, Exxon, to put their gas into the pipeline. That's the TransCanada AGEA approach. Denali, the BP Conoco approach, is also going to open season. We're close. I helped write AGEA. I voted for it when it passed, and I sat on the floor of the Senate. In a sense, in this state, we're in the oil industry. And we're, tonight, as we passed AGEA, I said, it's like we're drilling a well. We might hit dust. Some wells hit there. But if we do hit a gas pipeline with AGEA, it will return a fair economic value to you and you and you, whether you're in Kodiak, Ketchikan, or Kotzebue. You'll get a fair economic return. It's like we're putting our house up for sale right now, and if you want $500,000 for your house, I can sell it for $100,000 to the oil industry right now, but that's not good. If you want $495,000 for your house, we're gonna have to fight for it. As your governor, I'll fight and make sure we get fair value for your gas, and you get roads and schools for that money.
Okay, thank you very much, Hollis French. Second question coming from the moderator. People who follow public policy and many citizens are quite aware that we face something approaching a crisis in healthcare, both in cost, delivery, and availability. Yet at the same time, what we hear here in Alaska mostly is denunciations of so-called Obamacare. What can the governor and the Alaska legislature do to improve healthcare services and help contain costs?
Great question, and it's got many answers. But let's start with the first thing. Drop the lawsuit against the federal government protesting a bill that's designed to give health insurance coverage to every Alaskan who doesn't have it. If you have an insurance policy tonight, and many of you do, this plan will not hurt you. But if you don't, the idea is to make private insurance affordable. It's a very simple idea. It's a good idea. I supported a bill that I wrote with help from a great staffer. I'd like to mention his name, Andy Motoro. Helped me write a bill and put up a website. And we did hundreds of speaking engagements, not hundreds, dozens. And we pushed this bill because it's the right thing to do. And when the national bill passed, that's a good thing. And I don't know why the governor wants to stop someone from providing reasonably priced insurance to Alaskans. I fail to understand that. There's lots we need to do, but first things first, drop that suit.
Ethan Berkowitz.
Healthcare is about real people, and oftentimes during the debate about healthcare, there's a lot of discussion about policy and statistics. But it's about real people, and we need to keep that in mind. I think that will drive us towards finding solutions. What can we do here? We ought to be allowed to buy insurance over state lines. We ought to allow small businesses and individuals to pool together if that's what they choose to do. We ought to allow for supplemental payments with Medicaid and Medicare so that doctors don't continue to lose money on every new patient that they get. We need a medical school in this state. We need expanded nursing. We need electronic records keeping, which means that we need to have the infrastructure that's required, the broadband infrastructure infrastructure. There's a lot of things that we can do in the state, but standing pat and doing nothing isn't an answer. Doing as Sean Parnell did, rejecting Denali Kid Care, that's a step in the wrong direction. He deserves to be roundly criticized for it. We need to provide health care for our people. It's not just a question of access to care here. It's also a question of making sure that Alaskans have the security that comes from having that health care available.
Okay. Now let's turn to closing statements, and we'll start with Ethan Berkowitz. 1 minute, sir.
Thank you very much. Alaska is a great place. My wife and I are proud to be raising our children here. We've had the opportunities to travel widely. We're blessed by the multiple cultures that are here, by the greatness of the state. But I have real concerns about the direction we face. I have real concerns that Alaska has been complacent for too long, that we've been coasting on past achievements. And until we have strong leadership, leadership that's aggressive in grabbing Alaska's opportunities, we're going to continue to slide downhill bit by bit. We've seen that happen with wages in the state. At one time, we were among the top with per capita income. Now we're in the middle. At one time, we had a top flight educational system, and now 40% of our children don't graduate. We can do better. And for Alaskans to accept mediocrity, that's not the Alaska I know. This is a special place. We have an opportunity to live up to the legacy and pass that on to our next generation. And I would appreciate your support on August 24th.
1 minute, Hollis French.
Again, thanks for having me into your home. I do have a vision for Alaska. It's how we move the state forward, and it's through renewable energy and education. And I have a concern. I have a concern about who we send out to represent us in this election. I heard my friend Ethan Berkowitz tonight say, if we keep doing what we've been doing, we'll keep getting what we've been getting. We sent him out as our nominee in 2006, and he lost to Sean Parnell. We sent him out in 2008, and he lost to Don Young. I'm afraid if we keep doing what we've been doing, we'll get the same result. I want to be your nominee. I want to be your champion for democratic progressive values. Thank you for having me into your home. Thank you for listening. On August 24th, I'd be honored to have your vote. Good night.
Thank you, Hollis French.